Good morning, y'all. It's Juliette Miranda from the Unwritable Rant podcast, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Good morning! Too Much Scrolling for November 14th, 2017. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflow.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. Boy, 2017 is the year of Twitter, isn't it?
The year of Twitter. Twitter has been around.
It's been big this year, right?
Well, big as in, as far as
certain user that uses it and says a lot of things, and he has a lot of characters that he likes to share.
A lot more characters now, though.
Uh-huh. Now we all get 280 character tweets, so we can share all of our thoughts twice as much as we did before. And boy, is that leading to an explosion of people who are doing too much scrolling.
Excellent. Excellent. That's one of my favorite bits that we do on our Twitter feed is when someone mentions too much scrolling, we link to it, of course.
And I go, yes, you're right. We are too much scrolling. This is a very exciting time for us. Thank you for mentioning the show. And they're always like, show? What?
We have to advertise some way, Steve.
That's right. This is free advertising. Twitter is free advertising for us. We love it.
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. Okay. You know how much I like kaiju films. Those rubber monsters stomping on Tokyo, Godzilla.
For the uninitiated, that would be the Godzilla movies.
Godzilla and King Kong. I love those movies. They're cheesy. They're silly.
Big monsters.
There's something about them that I love. There's a movie that came out last year. Well, it was released several different times at several different film...
It was at film festivals.
Film festivals.
But it was released to the public in April.
Yes.
Of this year.
Yes.
So it was on our list of things to watch.
This is called Colossal. It is a kaiju film with a really interesting twist.
So we watched the trailer for this, and the whole time I'm going, this is going to be a lighthearted comedy.
It's not. It's not. It's a very dark drama with some comedic pieces to it, but it's more drama than comedy.
It is. It is about the demons inside, Steve, as they all are.
Yeah. This features Anne Hathaway, the beautiful, wonderful Anne Hathaway, Jason Sudeikis, who's not quite as beautiful, but still wonderful.
A handsome guy.
And Tim Blake Nelson, who's really something to watch in this.
All right, so the premise of this is that there are these big monsters showing up in Seoul, Korea.
Correct.
And
not Tokyo.
And yeah, interesting.
Interesting. Using the word Seoul, maybe a play on words there.
Well, the whole point is we get from the trailer that somehow one of them is connected to Anne Hathaway's character.
That's right. She is back home from 25 years of living in New York City, being a powerful person. She's back home and she's having some problems. She has an alcohol problem.
And I think that's really what the darkness of this comes down to.
Yes.
Is that initially we think it's a drinking problem. We find out that she is connected to one of these characters. And we don't want to give away the entire movie. But what I can say is that the demon she's fighting for her is alcohol.
Uh-huh.
And Jason Sudeikis is fighting the same demon, alcohol.
Along with a list of others. They each have their own demons that they are fighting.
Sure. And you know, it could be anger or anything like that. The boyfriend that we are initially, in the first scene we're introduced to, is Anne Hathaway's character, kind of comes in and looks like she's been out for a hard night of drinking.
Uh-huh.
And he's getting ready to go through another one of those, should I be angry with you or whatever. He says, I'm over it. Your bags are packed. Get out of my house.
Right.
And that's why she ends up going home. But the whole point of that is we eventually learn that he has his own challenges when dealing with her also.
Mm-hmm.
And this is actually, there's a depth to this. There is something that is a play there.
There is a depth to it, but I was frustrated by how they didn't directly show us the depth. They gave us this metaphor of this demon that is being controlled by this young lady in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
But then they didn't take the next step and say, see, she's got demons that she needs to use to find a way to be a better person. It wasn't really blatant in its metaphor.
Sure. And in fact, you're talking about the ending, and we won't give away the ending, right, that she walks into a bar, yeah, at the end. So,
that is the last scene.
So what does she learn from that? We don't know. We
right.
don't know.
What journey does this character take? I love great characters and taking a great journey and changing, being a different person at the end of the story from the beginning. Does that happen to her here? I'm not sure.
All right. So if you are watching this or choose to watch this, you certainly are not watching a Godzilla film. Although although it does take place in the background.
It's like watching a movie in front of a Godzilla movie. There is a Godzilla movie that's happening, but it's not the movie that we're watching.
Correct. And what you're really watching is how do individuals kind of address the challenges of their shortcomings,
mm-hmm,
the things that they would like to change. Those around them are noticing. There's the scene where the guy's going to go to the restroom. He goes, I've got problems.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, yeah, you have a Coke problem.
Yeah, we know. We know. We've known for a long time. We've not been calling you out on it, but we know.
Okay. So the ability to call someone out of it, but also to be the enabler.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, if you have interest in kind of watching this, I think there is something unique about this, something different. And I certainly would say this is a when I say grown-up film, I mean, teens could watch it too, but really this is, I'm an older guy. I'm just, I can watch it and kind of see what's going on. I'm playing with it in my mind too.
Yeah, this one's on Hulu right now. So you can go to our show notes and click on it in Hulu. It is a good time. It's an hour and a half, hour 45 movie. It is not as deep as I would like it to be, but it's certainly got that metaphor in there, and you'll have some fun with it.
Steve, I got to have some fun this week.
Oh, boy.
Woo!
Oh, I love it. You got to watch the 30 for 30 on Ric Flair. This one's called Nature Boy.
To be the man, Steve, you got to beat the man.
That's right.
Oh, my goodness.
I love that stuff.
Well, I grew up in North Carolina, and wrestling and NASCAR are two of the big sports there.
Right.
And you grew up at a time where WWE was
WWF
big time.
WWF was huge in my childhood. The Hulk Hogans of the world, everybody knew Hulk Hogan, whether they watched wrestling or not. Hulk Hogan was a character in our country.
Well, before Ric Flair joined the WWE,
mm-hmm,
he was part of World Championship Wrestling.
Right.
Wrestling, Steve. The other wrestling league. And he was the star. In fact, when he moved over to WWE, it was Hulk Hogan and Ric Flair.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were these big power players. Well, this is a story of the Nature Boy, Ric Flair's life.
Yeah.
And he is such a fun character as far as the character. What I got from this was, and by the way, you can watch it on it's streaming on ESPN's app.
Okay.
If you have a Roku, an Apple TV, an Amazon Fire Stick or whatever, you should be able to stream this pretty easily.
Okay.
But you get what a hard life this is. Now, when I say you are just basically flying from one place to another, you got these big events going on, you got to keep yourself in shape, you got to not get injured.
Mm-hmm.
And Ric Flair is talking about his workout routine. He's working out most of the day. Along with that, he's drinking 10 beers. He's having 4 or 5 drinks of hard alcohol on top of that.
Wow.
And he's functioning.
Yeah.
And, he's home only for brief periods of time, basically to, make children, and his children are growing up on their own. All right, so what we have is this hard pounding life, and you just recognize that it was hard on him,
mm-hmm,
and it was hard on his family.
Yeah,
and he spent a lot of money. He spent a lot of, as a lot of these people do, as most entertainers do. It's a lot to be the character.
Yeah.
And even if you have this huge following.
I think of like stand-up comedians who are on the road all the time living a very similar hard life. Maybe not the exercise part, but maybe all the other parts of being on the road, being away from home.
Well, it destroys people. I mean, mm-hmm, I always mention Alice Cooper when he basically said he had a meeting with a doctor. The doctor said, listen, you'll be dead in a couple years if you continue to live this life of drugs and alcohol. And so he picked up golf. Think of what Ozzy Osbourne is. I mean, he basically has a wife that took care of him because he had a very difficult time doing anything besides being this performer. You got to have this team. Mm-hmm. And those teams, you know, ebb and flow, and, you know, there's always a story there. But anyway, this is the story of Ric Flair. There's a great group of people being interviewed for this. There's tragedy in Ric Flair's life. His daughter right now is currently wrestling on the circuit, and she has taken over basically the Nature Boy persona. So a wonderful, playful time. You'll get a lot. You'll get a little too much information at times.
And don't you love those 30 for 30s? I really enjoy the documentary style.
You can't go wrong with these
guys.
I
agree.
Most of them are fascinating.
I agree. You also got to see Visionaries. This is Robert Kirkman's Secret History of Comics. This is on AMC, and the first episode is free. You can click on our show notes and watch this one. Tell us all about this one.
You should be able to go to the store, and you can download the first episode. This is a series. I only got to see the first show. This one, the first show has to deal with the Mighty Misfits who made Marvel. So Marvel Comics is our group or our topic of this. Robert Kirkman writes the Walking Dead comic. He also wrote a book, a comic called Invincible. So that's where his connection to this comes from. There's a wide variety of people being interviewed in this. You've got writers, you have artists, you have actors who played in these characters, in these movies. And then you have Stan the Man Lee.
Of course you do. Of course you do.
Well, you know, the deal is he's getting so much older now. Mm-hmm. If we don't start making these things recorded for posterity, this is incredibly high quality program. There's a lot to learn about the history of comics. It's not been a lot of, I've read a bunch
of. You have read and seen so many of these, and it's such a great story. Every story that we've read has been such full of character, documentary style, biography style stories. There's great stories behind the idea of comic books.
Well, I absolutely have eaten this up, and I think a lot of people will too. It's a high quality program about this topic, and if you want something easy to watch and certainly not, there's nothing really so controversial in this.
Right.
Go watch it. I think that you'll enjoy it. It's too bad that we've lost so many of those creators. Mm-hmm. That we've lost their stories. And this is a way of being able to kind of put it together. This is the latest version. I'm going to see the next one. This should be pretty good.
Good. Opening this week, we've got the new Netflix series, The Punisher, the highly anticipated. The Punisher is such a great character.
All right, so The Punisher is a Marvel Comics character. Mm-hmm. He is a gentleman who lost his family. He was a soldier at one time.
Right.
His family was murdered in front of him. And at that point, he is the anti-hero. So he is not a good guy like Spider-Man, but he is the guy that will go and he will kill the bad guys because they're bad guys.
He's the vigilante who's doing this because it's the right thing to do, but boy, does he have methods.
Well, and that's the whole challenge of this. Mm-hmm. So he is part of the Netflix series. Has started out with Daredevil. We ended up going through Jessica Jones. Mm-hmm. We ended up having Luke Cage. We had the Iron Fist, Danny Rand, and then we had the Defenders
when they all came together.
Okay, and this is the next round of series. Mm-hmm. And this is the one that came out after the Defenders. So this one is this character was introduced in the second season of Daredevil.
Right.
And so we'll see how this should perform. So
I have high expectations for this. The Punisher is a character that has been put together really well. It's a very developed character, and we've seen some really questionable movies with the Punisher. Remember the Dolph Lundgren?
Sure. Oh, well, a lot of people, Marvel did not have control over those movies.
Right.
When Marvel got control over Daredevil, that was it was through Netflix. They did a very good job at creating this character. My understanding is Wilson Fisk is coming back.
Oh, good.
So
I need some car doors closed.
So that's right. He was a great character in the first season of Daredevil.
Oh boy.
They have not advertised this as much as they could have, and part of that's because we have real life going on around us with shooters and stuff like that.
That's true.
And so we'll see how this performs. You know, the zeitgeist of the time has a lot to do with what character is important,
right?
And what stories get told. And this is going to be an interesting one to see how it's going to perform.
Also opening this week is the other comic book movie, Justice League. When I say highly anticipated, I mean we've been talking about this for like 5 years.
From the Hall of Justice, Steve. This is Super Friends.
Yes! Oh, man. I love the Super Friends growing up. That was some fun cartoon.
Wendy and Marvin, or do we have Sam and Jaina? You never know.
Oh, man. Now I'm totally sidetracked because now I just want to watch those instead. I have high anticipation for this Justice League movie. I think it's going to be good. I hope it's going to be good. Wonder Woman last year really gave me the real feeling of what a DC movie could be compared to the Batman versus Superman.
The challenge with the Man of Steel and with the latest Batman versus Superman mm-hmm. is that they've been very dark.
Yeah.
And they are they're anchored back to the 80s where we had the anti-hero became the subject of in deconstructing these stories mm-hmm. that were meant for 7 to 10 year olds back in the 50s, 60s and 70s became like what if they really existed?
Right.
So what we end up having for Warner Brothers, who owns Superman and Batman and Wonder Woman, was they brought over a guy from the comic side named Jeff Johns. And Jeff Johns helped a little bit with the Wonder Woman movie, but we should see his work showing up here. And the idea is to lighten it up a little bit, have a little more fun with these characters. These characters were meant for children.
And they should be tales about heroism. They should be heroes that we are holding up as a good example. And hopefully we'll see that in the Justice League.
There's going to be a big push on it. This should be a very big film for this week and for the Thanksgiving week.
Huge.
But that's not the only movie coming out this week, Steve.
Yeah, there's a movie called Wonder. This is based on the book of the same name. This is a heartwarming tale of a young boy who has so many medical issues that he now has. He has a face that is scarred from all of this medical treatment, and how he can enter the fifth grade and become a part of that school.
Well, this is a very touching book. My daughter ended up reading it with the class. The teacher made this an emphasis for the fifth grade class. And the idea is that there are kids who, for medical reasons, do not get to go to early grades.
Right.
And eventually they enter regular school mm-hmm. and maybe they're shorter. Maybe they have some disfigurement. Maybe there's some challenge they have to deal with that is above and beyond what many children have to deal with. And this is the story on how the children of the school react to that. And there are challenges. There's bullies and stuff like that.
Sure.
And then there's also the idea of just accepting people for who they are. We all have our plays, and some can do more, letting you know their brightness shine is a good way of saying it.
There you go.
One of the great things I did at Field Day a few years ago is we had a gentleman. He had some leg issues. His legs weren't developing as well as everything. And how wonderfully his classmates, you know, they're playing soccer, they're playing all this, how they worked with him mm-hmm. to allow him to compete with not putting his body in jeopardy.
That's great.
So anyway, you see all sorts of stuff.
I do.
And
at
you're
school,
a teacher.
At school, I see this all the time. I see the kids who are struggling and the kids who are bullies and the kids who are really, really caring and really try to help as much as they can. But there's that line where if the kid does not want help, you cannot be the kid who steps in and helps the kid.
Well, and that's a great point, too, is that you've got to work with them
as people.
Yes.
Absolutely.
The idea is not to cradle someone to the point where they can't compete. You don't want the lion from the Wizard of Oz where he doesn't have courage.
Right.
You want to work with them in a way of knowing that they need to know their limitations and know their strengths.
There's some great stories. This is one of those great stories. I look forward to seeing this movie.
So that would be a family film that you could see.
There is one called The Breadwinner. This is a animated feature about a 11-year-old girl growing up under the Taliban in Afghanistan in 2001.
Exactly. Angela Jolie, she's financed this. She's one of the producers of it. This is an animation film. And so if you are a person who would like to go to a different part of society and see how they live, this would be a good place to see.
This is a great view into a different culture, a culture that we might not know a lot about. We might have seen the headlines, but what is life like for these people? This looks like a very interesting way to look at that.
There was a cartoon or an animation film a few years ago called Persepolis, and it dealt with the fall of Iran and the rise of Islam in more fundamentalist Islam in Iran. Well, it was fascinating. Absolutely, because once again, you get an idea of what their society was like, American society, and then it wasn't like American society.
Wow.
And so this was once again, way to be able to go and live 1,000 lives without actually having to be there.
There is another animated film called The Star. This is the story of Christmas, the story of the first Christmas, as told by camels and sheep and a bird and all sorts of other animals who are talking, and one of them is the voice of Tracy Morgan.
All right, if I said this looks awful, that certainly is not, I'm not meaning to be so demeaning to someone's hard work.
Yeah.
But let's just say that maybe this is for the 4 or 5 year old, but can 4 or 5 year olds really...
And do they want to hear Tracy Morgan as a camel? Is that really a thing?
I don't know. But my point is,
I don't know who's watching
this
movie.
The other movie seemed to be for all ages.
Yeah.
This one looks like for really young people who want to watch maybe movies that are not very good.
Yeah, this might.
I could be totally wrong, but I don't think I am.
The trailer seems to indicate that this should be a direct-to-video kind of a movie. Boy, we'll see what happens with that one. Speaking of direct-to-video, there is a movie coming out this week that I will spend my time to watch. I will find this movie and I will watch it.
Oh,
it's
God
called
blesses.
Attack of the Killer Donuts.
Of course it is, Steve. Of course it's called Attack of the Killer Donuts. Seems to be ready for Mystery Science Theater.
Yes.
On the day of release.
Or Svengoolie. This is your late night movie of the week. This is
made today.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Obviously, this is a play on Attack of the Killer Tomatoes from 1978.
Exactly.
I loved Attack of the Killer Tomatoes in 1978.
I liked the song.
My mother and I watched that movie and laughed and laughed and laughed. Now, remember, I've been watching Svengoolie for as long as I can remember. I've been watching Mystery Science Theater for a very long time. I like watching these kinds of movies, these silly B-movies, and enjoying just the way that they decided to put this movie together.
Well,
this looks like my pick of the week.
And, you know, last year we watched The Love Witch.
Yeah.
We watched Zombievers. So this is the B movie is alive and well.
Absolutely.
In 2017.
There's a lot of joy to be brought from a B movie. There's so much silliness in this. Go watch this trailer. This trailer is just as silly as the Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, and it really makes my sides of my mouth go higher. I'm happy.
Another reason to give up sugar, Steve.
Oh yeah. It'll kill you. Book it. Brings us to our book it, our book of the week, and we have another special guest.
I'm peacing out, man.
Oh, you are so excited about this, Chip. Mark Voger, who is a writer and graphic designer and schlock junkie, he put together a book called Monster Mash, Creepy, Kooky Monster Craze in America. We talked about that that was 2 years ago, man.
It was, and that was just a fun, you know, sort of... reminder of the toys and the movies,
the collection,
the stuff of that era,
that nostalgia.
Sure.
And he's got a new book that's coming out this week. This one is called Groovy: When Flower Power Bloomed in Pop Culture. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, Chip. I was doing laundry, and I appreciate the distraction.
All right, so we've got our lava lamp on. The incense has been lit. So we've got and I'm wearing my Birkenstocks, so things are really good, man.
All right. So your book is all about the era of the late 60s and early 70s, that flower power part of society, and looking back at all of the, wow, the list of things that happened in that time period.
The pop pieces.
And how it affected pop culture. Pop culture changed massively as a result of this time period.
Yes, absolutely. And, one of the things that's weird is when I started it, I thought it was going to be just a lighthearted romp. I thought it would just be, you know, just grooviness and just fun. And, of course, I always knew there was, like, serious stuff in there. But what surprised me was the more I got into it, I realized the dark stuff that happened during that decade, you can't have one without the other. They fed each other, for better or for worse. And I'm, of course, talking about the Vietnam War, the struggle for civil rights, the assassinations, and, the election of Richard M. Nixon. But, groovy culture is almost like a flower, like a lone flower that grew out of an abandoned parking lot full of, cracked concrete and broken glass. Somehow it found a little dirt and grew, groovy culture was a response to all that dark stuff, actually.
Well, that's kind of where the concept of flower power came from. You know, Allen Ginsberg in 1965 coined that term to show people how the protests should be, that this war, this thing that was happening, had to be countered with love.
Yeah, and it's funny because the Beats were the guys that came up with the term hippies, and they meant it as sort of a gentle term of derision. It was like, oh, these are the new kids that are coming in, largely San Francisco at that time, coming in, and they're trying to be so hip, and so they call them hippies. So real hippies didn't like the word hippie at the time, and of course, the establishment, mainstream media at the time, and
the man,
the man would use that term, like, those dirty hippies. We always heard that, but now a lot of the ex hippies that I talk to, they say, no, I'm at peace with it. Yeah, I was a hippie,
It's kind of like the term geek. I am definitely a geek, but that has a negative connotation. The idea of being a nerd is not something that you should be proud of, but boy, have we in the geek culture embraced that idea. So tell us about this journey of making this book.
What happened was I was always fascinated with this period, and I was 11 years old in 1969 when Woodstock happened, so I was old enough to notice things, but too young to really take part. And so when I was 11, 12, 13, I was also, really starting to think about girls, every waking hour and wondering, how do you talk to a girl? How do you get to kiss a girl? But if I watched like hippies on television, on like some corny television show or in a movie, I noticed that the hippie chicks were like really cute. They had long hair, part in the middle, headbands. They were braless, wearing hip-hugger jeans, and they seemed possessed of dubious morals. And they seemed to, think nothing of, just laying a sloppy open-mouth kiss on, a random hippie dude. They'd just say, "Come here, man," and then they just lay one on him. So when I was that age, 12, 13, I just thought, I can't wait to grow my hair and get my sloppy open-mouth kiss from a hippie chick.
Wow.
That was the start.
Well, that seems like a boy's dream right there.
So what's your favorite part of collecting all of these stories and all of this memorabilia and the nostalgia of this book?
Well, it's funny because there was always this little battle, and it's in the book about authentic groovy culture versus, kind of corporate groovy culture where they're just trying to cash in.
The monkeys.
So a head shop in a city might be a place where you could get it was more authentic, but one that you'd find like in a mall in suburbia, they would be marketing incense burners and things like that that were kind of faux Asian objet d'art and things like that, and then of course the vision of hippies in an episode of Dragnet was that they were evil. If you saw a Bob Hope movie and a hippie was in it, it'd be like, I saw a hippie with one shoe. Did you lose a shoe? No, I found one, man. It'd be like, it was really a riot, actually. And then once even the that groovy culture kind of started to fade away. That's when they brought in all that Saturday morning stuff like Banana Splits and HR Puff and stuff. And to me, that stuff is, to me, as a kid at the time, I was like, that stuff is just as psychedelic as Lucy in the Sky with Diamond by the Beatles. So I was like, I just thought it was all one thing. You know, I was digging it.
Well, I was going to say, even if you started looking at Romper Room or Sesame Street, Doug Henning's, the music, you know, everything's a world of magic. You know, there is just something that echoed that or inspired this all this generation of stuff. You touch on so much of it, you know, from the television culture, the movies, the music, and the comics of that time. I mean, it's just an explosion of color.
Yeah, it's pretty cool because, like, in the comics, for instance, you had, you know, the majors, the big two, DC and Marvel, and Archie comics to a large degree, like, kind of, you know, at first they were kind of ignoring it. If you looked in the mid-60s, they were still pretty square. And then after a while, I guess it just permeated the culture so much that everybody threw up their hands and they started doing stuff. And the old guard was looking really old by then, you know.
Sure.
So they had Wonder Woman. They took away her powers and they dressed her up like Mrs. Peel from the Avengers. And they had her like kung fu fighting and hanging out with hippies and bikers and beautiful people. And the Archie gang, I mean, they never grew their hair long, but they were wearing groovy threads, you know. So, and then, of course, the underground comics was a very organic movement, you know, Robert Crumb and all those guys. That was the real thing.
Some Jack Davis drawings in there. And if you're even not familiar with Jack Davis, he was a Mad magazine artist. But you've seen his stuff on movie posters and everything. And that was the other thing that I noticed throughout your book, is that even if you were not part of a specific era, like you didn't really know what was going on in Archie Comics, that same look would show up somewhere else. Like it became the look of the Brady Bunch or something like that, the clothing styles. And they were kind of all echoing each other is a good way, the way I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, and of course, you know, by the time you got to the Brady Bunch and the Partridge Family, that was really the nadir of authentic groovy culture. Like a lot of people point to, you know, there were three events that kind of signaled the end. One was the Altamont Free Concert with the Rolling Stones, where Meredith Hunter, an 18-year-old, was, you know, stabbed to death right in front of the stage while the Stones were doing "Under My Thumb" by a Hell's Angel,
wow.
And you know, that was captured on film, and that was, you know, kind of the you know, the end of the flower power thing. You know, that was where, you know, you just realized it wasn't sustainable. I mean, a lot of people also said that when Robert Kennedy was assassinated, that, you know, that was the end of the 60s for a lot of them.
Sure.
But the other thing is the death of four icons: Jim Morrison, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, and Brian Jones. And they happened within a 2-year period to the day, and they were all the exact same age, 27. And then finally, like, even the Manson murders, like that contributed. That made people think, like, oh yeah, this is over. This is where it's come to. But you still had things like the Brady Bunch, the Partridge Family, H.R. Puff and stuff, all that kind of fake stuff, the Banana Splits, that they were now selling to families and children on Saturday morning. So it was like an artificial version of it, but it was still really groovy. I mean, you put on Banana Splits, man, they rock.
Sure. I've got a question for you, because there's a lot of writing in this book. This is not just a visual book. You interview people, and one of the people that you interview is Brian Wilson, and obviously that was had to be very special to talk to the gentleman who took the Beach Boys from this innocent California band to really sort of experiencing the movement that, you know, during Pet Sounds and eventually Smile came out a long time later. But tell me a little bit about your interviewing Brian Wilson and what you guys talked about.
Brian Wilson was I talked to him 4 times, actually. And, you know, that's what I've done my whole career, is interview people, you know, anybody I could get. And so usually you prepare, you know, like 12 questions. And Brian Wilson, you know, he's cooked, you know, he doesn't have much to say a lot of times. It's no secret, you know, he's a drug casualty. He says it himself, you know. But of course he is, you know, the architect of the Beach Boys sound and one of the greatest songwriters of the 20th century. And so anyway, the first time I talked to him, we burned through those 12 questions like in like, you know, 3 minutes. I was like, oh no, you know. So I realized like the tack to take with him is to just ask like a lot of questions, and you might get one word answers or a sentence, and then it all adds up. So the interview that you see in there, you know, was the result of like I said, four interviews. So, but I got great stuff out of him. And my favorite quote from that, from one of the interviews with Brian Wilson was, he said that he believes that, I said, you know, you believe in God. And he says, yeah, I think God is music, you know, and that just sounds like him, you know, to him, God is music, you know. And incidentally, he didn't acknowledge that he says, I've heard people say that I'm, you know, one of the greatest writers of the 20th century, but he didn't know if he agreed. And I said, well, who would you give that honor to? And without flinching, Burt Bacharach, he just said, Burt Bacharach, you know. So, I mean, which, you know, a lot of people agree with that, you know, great songwriter.
Sure.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it was really cool. And I'll tell you one funny thing, Chip. I said, like when you're preparing 30 questions for somebody now, you know, so I just said, have you been to the movies lately, Brian? He says, yeah. What movie did you see? Norbit, which is, of course, that terrible Eddie Murphy comedy,
yeah.
Right? And then I said, do you have a favorite movie? And he said, Norbit.
Wow.
So Norbit was his favorite movie at that moment, whenever I talked to him around that time, you know.
Sure. It reminds me a lot of the Glenn Campbell movie that we saw when he was going through dementia.
Mm-hmm.
And when the music started, he could perform, but you know, he was really struggling outside of that setting. And it must hit some place in the brain where it just becomes natural.
The mind is an amazing tool. We can use it or we can lose it, and sometimes it's a combination of the two things. No doubt about that.
And music is huge because you know, there's many cases of dementia patients who, when you start singing, you know, a song to them from their childhood or a hymn from church, they start singing along. And I'm sure that's part of what happened with Glenn Campbell, is that, you know, those songs are like inside of him. So he was able to, you know, even though he couldn't remember 5 minutes ago, he was able to play the solo to Galveston perfectly.
Music plays a big part in your book. There's so much music to this era. Have you ever thought about adding an accompanying soundtrack to your book?
Oh man, what I love to. I mean, it's funny because we're working on the trailer right now for it, and we wish we could just use existing music like Incense and Peppermint by Strawberry Alarm Clock or something. But you know, you just can't. You know, the rights. You know, the cost. So
everything's locked up in rights.
I'm composing a jingle, you know, so...
Really?
I've always done that kind of stuff. But if you see the Monster Mash trailer, if you haven't seen it, please look at it, because my genius filmmaker nephew edited the thing, but I'll send you guys a link. But,
we'll put it underneath.
Yeah, we'll put it in the show notes. Monster Mash was such a great
book. I just went off the rail there, but yeah, I would love... Right. Of course, I would love to do an accompanying soundtrack, and I know what would be on it. It would be Incense and Peppermints and Crimson and Clover by Tommy James and the Shondells and A White Room by Cream and Day in the Life by the Beatles. I mean, you know, that would just be a dream playlist, of course.
So Monster Mash was such a great book 2 years ago. We enjoyed that one. This is a really great collection of information from this era.
Sure.
How do you think up the structure, the design of all of these books?
Well, I mean, that's the game, because I do design it as well. So that's the game. So the thing you do, it's almost like the writer's room where they put all the post-it notes on a bulletin board. I have a page plan, and I scrawl in very light pencil where I think everything should go. The game of it is you want it to be a chronological experience. You want it to be that people from the beginning to the end almost feel like they go through the period chronologically, but there's little themes, like there's a section on 45 RPM hits, you know, AM hits. There's a section on album bands, which you know, came to the fore during this period. Section on TV, section on movies. In other words, even though you're trying to do it chronologically, you also have to do it thematically, and so sometimes, you know, that makes it a grand puzzle. So, And then as I'm working, a lot of times I'm just like, okay, I don't have room for this, you know, so I'll just erase on that big page plan that I have. And then by the end, it's getting really tight, you know. So that's why there's that feeling that everything's like kind of jammed, packed, you know, which I love, you know, with both of the books, is because I'm like, it's getting near the end, and I'm like, I got to get this in. So I'm just trying to cover everything, trying to cover like all that period in 192 pages. It really is a fun puzzle.
What I enjoy most about it is it's a book that you could pick up, you could read for a little bit, you could put it down. You kind of get a complete idea going on, but if you wanted to read it all the way through, you're welcome to do so. So there, it's a great place. I say coffee table book in the sense that you can pick it up for a little while, you know, read for an hour, put it away, come back a week later, pick up, you know, another spot, and just kind of visually and intellectually kind of re-experience something from a period.
And every page of this book, Chip went to the next page and shouted out loud, "Oh, look at this.
Shirley MacLaine.
look at all of this information. This book is a joy to behold."
Well, from your lips to God's ears, Chip. You know. No, but, that's the thing. In design, even on a given page, there's a thing called multiple points of entry. In the porn sense, that's in the print design sense. See, I can't keep it clean, fellas. I don't know what's wrong with me. But multiple points of entry is on a given page. You want to make sure that it's not all what we call gray, which is just type. You know, you want every page to be inviting, but overall, you can't. You know, you have to have places that pop and some places that don't pop. You know, a place to rest your eyes, as the great artist Milton Caniff used to say. So yeah, that's the whole thing. Is you can. You can read it in one, you know, from beginning to end, or you can just, you know, pop in and read whatever you want. As long as you're looking at it, I'm happy.
All right. So we have this beautiful book here. My hope is at once this gets out and people start getting it, that you're working on your next project.
And of course, as you remember from last time, because I didn't tell you about Groovy, I told you about Son of Monster Mash, but I didn't tell you about Groovy, but I was working on Groovy when I talked to you last time. I'm so superstitious. And for my next one, I don't have a publisher just yet. It's the next one. It's like, you could consider it a trilogy almost, but it's a lot more serious. I can't talk about it yet.
We're excited to see whatever it'll be.
That's right. It'll be a year, 2 years from now, and all of a sudden we'll be talking again. And we'll have another exciting moment.
I hope so. It should take 2 years, but if it takes longer than that, it just means that I'm not finding a publisher, you know. But
so for today, hopefully, our listeners should go to their bookstore, should go to our Amazon store, amazon.toomuchscrolling.com, and find Groovy, When Flower Power Bloomed in Pop Culture by Mark Vulgar. Mark, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us about your work.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Chip. And God willing, I will see you in the future.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. Justice League is coming. The anticipation is high. And Justice League Day is Saturday, November 18th. You go to your local comic book shop and celebrate the anticipation of this story.
All right. So they have a bunch of giveaways at that point. So if you go to find your local comic shop, head over there, and they've got some Justice League comics for you.
Oh, yeah, they do.
And then you can go see the movie. So... Mm-hmm. They've designed this.
Cross promotion.
I think this has been going on for a few years, though. So anyway, this is another reason to get you to the store. What can I say?
Yeah, anything to get you into the comic book shop is important right now. If you are anticipating Thanksgiving, this is gonna make some French people really upset, like my wife, the French teacher, and JF Dubow. Hey guys, look. Hidden Valley Ranch is selling a keg of ranch dressing for the holiday season.
Steve, I'm a member of Costco. I've seen kegs of all sorts of stuff. I usually get a 2-liter bottle of Old Spice every year.
Oh, dear.
Well, you need some Brut. We've got it by the gallon.
Oh, my goodness. Now you can get your ranch dressing. Americans love their ranch dressing, and I am one of them. I buy a lot of ranch dressing. My wife hates hates it.
Steve, I can't help but thinking that there are some people who are being a little snooty when they say they don't like ranch dressing.
There is that. There is that, oh, you're so American in eating that.
You must be from the Midwest.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, all right. I should be more specific. You're right. It's more of a Midwestern
no,
thing.
No, no, no. I think all over the United States, ranch dressing has not been around forever. I mean, it was developed, was it 1949?
Yep, 1949 by Kenneth Henson. He invented the concept of Hidden Valley Ranch dressing while working on a ranch called Hidden Valley. That's why it's called Hidden Valley Ranch. That's a real thing.
So it's buttermilk, salt, garlic, onion, herbs, and spices.
Herbs and spices.
He must know Colonel Sanders.
Yeah, they're herbs and spices. The same herbs and spices. Yeah, I like ranch dressing. I don't know what to tell you. When I taught life skills in school one year, we made ranch dressing.
You
it's
did.
One of the things that we cooked in cooking class.
Well, I remember they used to sell the bottle. You used to have to make it yourself.
That's right.
So at one time you did. All right, so if we were having hot wings, would you get blue cheese or would you get ranch?
I would get blue cheese. I enjoy blue cheese more than I enjoy ranch, but I eat a lot of ranch.
I would say I'm blue cheese too on that. I have no hard feelings on ranch. Ranch is not my favorite dressing, but you know what? Sometimes you just go, I'll have some ranch. It's okay.
It's okay.
It's like Thousand Island. Yeah, is it?
Yeah, Thousand Island has a special nostalgic place in my mind because growing up, that was like the default dressing. If you went out to a restaurant and you said, give me a salad, and they said, okay, they would bring it out with Thousand Island. That was the dressing, at least of the south suburbs. I don't know. Maybe it was
local. I think that's true. And, you know, our palates have changed.
Yeah.
As a whole, you know, we've been exposed to more flavors. Like, I would anticipate over the next, say, 10 to 15 years, we're going to discover more Chinese and Indian herbs, stuff like that. You know, it's really interesting over in England, you know, curry and stuff like that. Indian food seems to be very much a part of their society.
I agree.
It hasn't had its day here in the United States. It's got to be coming.
I believe that it is. There's certainly something about Columbus sailing to get the spices from India that when they got here, there were no spices, so we still don't have Indian food.
All right, Steve. Let's just say that we're running out of sand.
I hate sand.
Sand is coarse, but it's not coarse in the desert, Steve.
That's right. We are running out of a certain kind of sand that we need for so many different things. The
industrial
list of things
stuff
that we make out of sand is growing, and the sand in the deserts has been rolling around out there for so long that it's rounded. We need a jagged kind of sand.
Okay, but Steve, is there a solution to the shortage of sand?
Yes, a company has discovered that what we can do is take beer bottles and crush them back into that jagged piece that we need for industry.
All right, and this machine is actually pretty cool. It's a Kiwi machine, Steve. It's from New Zealand.
Okay, guys.
All right, man.
All right, man.
All right, so anyway, I love the New Zealand accent, by the way. the point of it looks like it's like this great big box. And you put your beer bottle in it, and all of a sudden it turns into sand.
It crushes it down into the right shape that they need, takes the silicon and the label off somehow. I'm not sure how that magic happens, but technology.
Magic, Steve.
Yeah.
Magic. But the whole point is that in order to get more sand, we have to drink more beer.
I endorse this message.
Steve, we could save the world by drinking more beer.
I have been saying that for about 20 years.
So there's your message right there, is that we need a certain type of sand. The beaches have it. We're running out of it. The desert doesn't have it. But if you drink beer, they'll crush your bottle into
usable sand. Industrial things.
There you go.
That we can then use. That's great. It's a great story.
We're a week away.
Yes. 10 days.
From Thanksgiving.
10 days from Turkey Day.
Then at that point, I guess we'll start listening to Christmas music. I mean, at some point, it's got to pop up.
Yeah, there's enough people who are already listening to Christmas music in this house. Thank you very much. But yes, 10 more days. No, actually, 9 days to Turkey Day.
All right.
You know what Turkey Day is, right?
For Turkey Day? Well, for many of us, we celebrate by having a meal with our family.
Yeah.
But there are other people who celebrate other ways.
Yeah, you know what Turkey Day is.
What is Turkey Day?
Turkey Day is the day that we watch bad movies, because turkey is a word that we use for bad movies. The Mystery Science Theater annual Turkey Day 2017 was announced this week. It's going to happen. Thank the turkey gods up in Turkey Valhalla.
The gobblers.
We are going to see 6 MST3K episodes on Turkey Day. You can stream them on YouTube, ShoutFactoryTV.com, Pluto.tv, and this year they're adding Twitch to that list. So you have no excuses. There's nothing else going on starting around noon.
There's football, Steve.
There's nothing else going on. So Turkey Day is on. It just happens to be my birthday too, so I'm going to be watching a lot of bad movies.
That's right. All right, so for everyone's not going to be going to Black Friday after Thanksgiving, but here in Chicago we actually have something pretty special that you need to go ahead and plan for if you are a person named Steve.
That's right. My other birthday tradition, the 18th annual Chicago TARDIS convention, is happening right after Turkey Day, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, November 24th, 25th, and 26th at the Westin Lombard Yorktown Center in Lombard, Illinois. I will be there with a giant smile on my face. 3 doctors are going to be in the house.
All right, just so that people are not confused by that, Lombard is a suburb of the Chicago area.
Yes.
So there you go.
And a TARDIS is the ship that Doctor Who travels in. This is the Chicago Doctor Who convention that I've been to every year for the last, 25 years.
I don't even know what you're talking about, Steve.
Oh, yes, you do.
All right, so we've got Thanksgiving coming up.
Yes, it's on Turkey Day.
Now, last Halloween, we asked our fans, and those listeners, so fans and listeners, how you like that, to read Frankenstein with us.
Yes.
And we had a lot of response. We got a bunch of emails concerning it.
Yeah.
We had a number of people
reading along with.
Twittering us a little bit about it. Anyway, everybody had a good time. We got a lot of responses in the local community, too.
Yep.
This year, we have something for Thanksgiving.
Let's do it again. We did it for one holiday. We now have a stake in the sand that says, watch out for the sand. We now have this flag that says we are going to do a book for our next holiday. And our next holiday coming up is Thanksgiving. We have chosen Truman Capote's The Thanksgiving Visitor to discuss. And we're going to do that next week. So your homework for this week is to find a copy. We'll have one in the show notes, and you can read along with us, The Thanksgiving Visitor by Truman Capote. Tell us about this story.
All right, so we discussed a few years ago a Christmas memory, which was about Sookie and the young people in Alabama growing up with, they were making fruitcakes. Because they had
fruitcake weather.
They had to go send fruitcakes to all the places. They had to go gather all the stuff. Sookie has some challenges. She may not be able to live on her own. It's a very poor time. I think it's Depression era is when it really takes place. But this is kind of Truman Capote's thinking back on his youth. And, you know, they had to get the bourbon for it. And obviously Prohibition was probably going on. Or in the South, obviously the alcohol was not thought of very highly. Mm-hmm. So they had to go get that.
The Duke boys had to deliver it.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And then, you know, you had to gather all the nuts and all that other fun stuff to be able to make it. And they sent one, obviously, to the president. Because why wouldn't you send something to the president?
Why not?
This is the follow-up to that. And this is, we're going to be revisiting Capote's youth in Alabama. This is about, you probably can read it in about an hour. This is a story about a bully. This is a story that can be all ages. So if you feel that your young person would like to join in reading us, you can read it to them, or they can read it to you, or they can read it on their own.
And it's a relatively short story. It should be able to
probably an hour or so.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So it's not too long. You actually can buy a Kindle version of the book that will have a Christmas memory and the Thanksgiving Visitor in it. If you go to our notes, we'll also have, you can just read it off the web. So this was in McCall's is where it originally showed up. So many magazines had short stories in them. This was one of those. Capote is just one of the great American writers. And I think that we'll gain some insight to have some fun.
There you go. There's your homework for the week. Make sure you're picking up a copy of The Thanksgiving Visitor. We'll discuss it next week. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think, Chip?
Only if we can come back next week.
I think we can. We have homework to do. We have to come back, I think. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-410-4TMS. We're at TooMuchScrolling.com. You can send us an email, TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter. And there's too much scrolling on Twitter. We're on Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio and every day of the week. And go to our new site, news.toomuchscrolling.com. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassan-Flo.
We'll see you in the future.
I just want